Hello, listeners. If you're listening to this, and I certainly hope you are, then you know that this is the Flophouse Max Fun Pledge Drive bonus episode from the Flophouse for this year's Max Fun Pledge Drive. We want to say thank you to all of our listeners who have supported us, who have given of their time, energy, and most importantly, their cash to Maximum Fun in order to make shows like the Flophouse possible. There's a lot of great shows on Maximum Fun. Many of them probably have better bonus episodes than this one. Please check them out when you finish listening to this one. But we want to thank you for your support. It's very important to us. It helps us keep going with the podcast. It's helped certainly two of the three of the hosts who do not always have stable employment get through this very difficult year we've just been through. So we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. So we wanted to do something special. This is Elliot Kalin talking, by the way. Usually when it's a bonus episode, it's Stuart Wellington running one of his amazing, legendary, classic games. That's right. That Stu, don't be modest. You can't see because this is an audio medium, but Stu is being very modest. He's saying, no, oh,
I'm
don't
blushing.
Bother. Oh, yeah, very blush. His face is gone.
A lot of hand
entirely
acting
red.
He's doing.
Hand acting. He's like a Kool-Aid man waving me away. That's how blushed he is. And how
I'm covering my face with a porcelain mask on a stick.
Yep.
Okay.
Just half of one.
Yeah, and so you guys, why don't you introduce yourselves, and then I'll talk about what we're actually going to do in this episode.
Well, I'm Dan McCoy, and that is
Stuart Wellington. All three members of the Flophouse are here.
Yes, that's right. As the Grand Conjunction predicted, which means that it is the beginning of the next round of human evolution.
As the Grand Conjunction on our Google Calendar foretold.
There's a Venn diagram of Flophouse hosts, and it all meets in the middle, which says, on this recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that mean during this Grand Conjunction, are we going to split into Skeksis and those weird guys, or are we going to morph from Skeksis and the weird guys
into
the tall guys?
They're called the Ancients, I believe. No, there's the Skeksis and the Ancients, right? Those.
Here's the thing. I love Jim Henson and the Muppets. Dark Crystal I've not seen since I was a kid, because every time I try, I'm just like, you know what? They were really right to tell you, Jim Henson, to not do all of this in a made-up language without subtitles like you originally wanted to, because even now, it's pretty boring. It looks great. I love the creature shop work, but...
This is not what this episode is about, but we can make it about how wrong you are if you want this episode to be about that.
Hey, Elliot, do you mind if I go get these Gartham and go send them after Dan?
I do not
mind
at all.
Love the Brian Froud designs. I think it's amazing puppeteering. It is just kind of a slog as a story, I think.
I disagree. I could sit there and watch Skeksis eating that gross meal at that table for probably four or 5 hours straight.
This day, every time my mom sits a plate of meat on the table, she calls it roast nebbery.
Wow.
That's nice. Well, you have the coolest mom. So one footnote. I recently watched that movie with my older son. He had never seen it. He loved it. So let's see those Gartham just smash through Dan's windows and ruin
his giant
planetarium.
It's time to revisit and give it another shot.
And footnote number two, which is less a footnote and more a drastically needed redirection. This Max Fun bonus episode is not about the Dark Crystal. As I was saying, we usually have these very long bonus saga series where Stuart runs us through a role-playing game. We have our characters in this kind of weird 30s setting that Stuart put together. I hope we pick up the story again soon, as my character is now living with alien worms in his head that are controlling his actions. But we will not be playing that game. Instead, it is I, the apprentice games master, who has been learning at the feet of the tutelage of the master games master, Stuart Wellington, who will be running a much-requested game, a long-awaited game. That's right, Flophouse Max Fun bonus pledge people, listeners, supporters. It is time for Stuart and Dan to play a little game we call Radio Zork. Now, for those who are not familiar with Radio Zork, America's favorite audio-based text-only video game, which is not a video game, it's not played with video, it's all text that's said out loud, so it's not even text, it's just words in audio. This is a game in which you play the part of you, a person on a mysterious mission, and you have to tell me what your moves are, and then the game, i.e. me, will respond. Now, originally this was played over the radio. People would write in once a week, and they'd have their move read, and the game would respond. It was sort of a mass communal game. The game begins. You are standing. It is a dark night. You are not the movie. It's an actual nighttime, and it's dark out.
It's not a DVD copy of The Dark Knight.
It is not. It's not. It is a DVD copy
of
The Dark Knight.
DVD of The Dark Knight.
No, that's not. Well, that's a good example
Satchel.
Of how you play. But you, why did you stick it in Satchel Paige's mouth? That's not okay. That's a grown man. He doesn't need a DVD in his mouth. Okay, so it is Dark Knight. You find yourself standing in front of a door to a mysterious mansion. Now, longtime listeners will know that nobody has ever gotten through that door. A lot of things have been tried. A lot of things have failed. But perhaps this is the night that Dan and Stuart will get through the door. So, Dan, Stuart, you can take turns. You can confer and then tell me what you're going to do. But what is your move in front of this door?
I feel like in, you know, the many years, of course, Zork was on the radio, many things were tried. So I feel like the obvious avenues have already... You know, so we should
twist the doorknob
over. Okay, kiss it. Did you say?
Yeah, kiss the doorknob.
your lips pucker and press against the cold, somewhat grimy metal of the doorknob. Suddenly, you feel a motion as the doorknob twists
grimy.
And twists. What's a doorknob? People's hands touch it. The guys who are bringing coal into this old house and everything.
Yes.
You feel a twist of movement. The knob is moving against your lips. The knob is turning from the inside.
What?
The door swings open. That's right. Nobody had ever tried love. The fifth element.
Okay.
Behind the door is a dark hallway.
Should we examine the hallway?
I mean, I did just kiss a doorknob. So yeah, let's examine the hallway.
You peer into the darkness. But you don't take a step forward, which is too bad because the wind blows the door shut. You stand in front of a closed door.
No, fuck. Oh.
Okay.
I guess we gotta kiss it again. I've kissed so many doorknobs just trying to find a prince.
Dan, do you want to kiss the doorknob this time?
Sure, I'll kiss the doorknob.
You lean forward again. A little, it's strangely more trepidatious because before it seemed like a crazy thing to do, and now it seems weird that you have to do it to open the door. Mm. You place your lips against the door, against the knob.
Less grimy at this point.
Instead, you miss the doorknob and trip and kiss the door instead. Nothing happens. So let's just say you kiss the doorknob this time. You feel the doorknob move against your face and turn. The door swings open. Nobody had tried love, the fifth element. There's a dark hallway beyond the door. What do you do? And better do it fast because it's a windy
step
night
into hall,
inside
step
the
into hall. Step into hall.
You step into the hall just in time as the door swings shut behind you. God. Slam, it says. Oh. You find yourself in the dark hallway. What do you do? It's very dark.
That's a good call. Wait, do I have an inventory? Do I have a lighter or matches?
You can always check inventory.
Check inventory.
You look through the courier bag that nobody realized has been hanging against your shoulder this whole time.
Wow.
Inside the courier bag, you find a lighter, a flashlight, some of those crappy little snaps, pop, firework things that are just full of a little bit of gunpowder and you throw them on the ground and they don't really do very much and they leave all that. They just litter everywhere. There's a package of those. A pencil. A calculator, but it's a solar-powered calculator, so it is not working right now. A puppet in the shape of a praying mantis, scotch tape, masking tape, duct tape, an audio tape of the soundtrack to the movie Cool Runnings, a baby doll, but there's just like a little scraggly hair at the top that's clearly been ripped out, and a key. So that's what's in the bag.
A key. The key was love, the fifth element.
Oh, okay. So what should we do? We should probably play the soundtrack to Cool Runnings, right?
Should. Do we have a way to play it?
Try it. Make the command. See.
Play soundtrack to Cool Runnings.
You look around for a cassette tape player, but it's so dark that you can't see if there is one in this narrow hallway.
We should use the flashlight first, probably.
Yeah, you're right. Use flashlight.
Okay, you use the flashlight. You have it backwards, and the light shines in your own face, blinding you for a second. Turning it around, you see that you are in a narrow, some would say unkempt hallway. There are spider webs all around, classic cobwebs, dust all over the floor, and the little bit of furniture. There's just a little side table that has on it an ashtray, a copy of a phone book from 1928, which means it's a very short phone book. There's not a lot of people had phones back then, so it's more of a phone pamphlet rather than the big, thick phone book. So if you wanted to use it to like stand on
like
or sit
on.
It's
like a zine, yeah.
Yeah, it's more like a, it's exact, it's a zine. It actually says phone zine, 1928. And up on the wall, there's a selection of taxidermied heads, a moose head, a mouse head, and also a sheep's head and a map of Sheep's Head Bay. And down
and is the map taxidermied?
The map is made. It is taxidermied. Yes, that's. I mean, say. Can you actually? Can you say inspect map?
Inspect map. Sorry.
Yeah, you see. You sorry. It's fine. I should have reminded you. You see that the map is actually made out of different skins from different animals. It's actually beautifully done.
Oh.
And there's a creepy painting whose eyes appear to follow you as you walk down the hallway.
Inspect painting.
Yeah.
You look at the painting. It's not a very well-painted painting. If it was by the same artist who made that Sheep's Head Bay taxidermy map, then taxidermy is really more their medium than paint. It seems to be the portrait of a man with a long, droopy mustache with a kind of vacant-eyed dog sitting in front of him. It's the dog's eyes that seem to follow you as you walk down the hallway.
Yeah, okay.
Kiss painting.
Kiss painting.
You kiss the painting. The painting swings open as if a hidden spring behind it. Behind is a very friendly-looking dog. The dog looks surprised, as if embarrassed to be caught spying, and also not realizing that you would have realized that the fifth element, love, was the key to this painting as well.
Yeah, this looks like Zork's love language is physical touch.
Examine hallway. Is it in the hallway? Talk to dog.
Okay, and what are you going to say to the dog?
Dan, what am I going to say to the dog?
Bark.
Okay. We say bark.
The dog cocks an eyebrow. Don't be a racist, says the dog.
Oh, wow.
I can talk.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Just
so now you're defensive. Now you're on the defense here.
Now I'm on the I'm on the back foot.
Where are we?
Now you're asking the dog this, or you're asking me this? Because I'll tell you, you're in a hallway. So please phrase it as you talking to the dog.
Talking to the dog. Where are we?
You're in the house I share with a mad scientist. I would have kind of think you'd want to know what house you're walking into. Anyway, I'm just a wall dog. I'm a dog that hangs out in the wall and just kind of watches this hall. You might call me a hall wall dog. In fact, that's my name, H.W. Dog. Hall Wall Dog is the name. Well, they shortened the name. It was Hall Wall Dogowitz, but at Ellis Island, we changed it just to Dog. It was easier that way. You can call me H.W.
You'd think we'd be less bored by a talking dog.
Yeah, I know.
I'm talking to the dog, and I ask, how do we get to the mad scientist?
The dog replies, are you already done with me? I'm kind of a talking dog. H.W. Dog is the name. Perhaps you have questions about how I learned how to talk, or whether I'm related to the historian and biographer H.W. Brands.
Yeah,
I mean, that's usually not how relations work. It's not based on the first two initials.
All right, says the dog. You passed my test. I will take you to see the mad scientist.
Wow. It's very nice of this dog. Game.
The dog leaps out of the painting. Not, you know what I mean, but the space behind the painting. The dog leaps out. This isn't the stained glass knight from young Sherlock Holmes. And so
it's not the painted world from Dark Souls.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in action. jumping in and out of the paintings.
No, the Looney Tunes are not back in action, sadly.
Yeah,
the
it's not the paintings from Mario 64, right?
Those are hanging on the walls too, but you don't have time to enter their levels.
And get all the stars.
The dog trots down through the hallway. "I should apologize for it being so dark," says HW Dog to you. "We just like to keep it that way because it's scarier that way."
Mm-hmm.
He takes you into a small kitchenette. It's nothing much to speak of. Wood cabinets. It looks like it hasn't been updated since the 1970s. "Now you see why we keep things so dark," said HW Dog. "It's not very scary in this kitchen, is it?" What do you say back to this dog?
So, any plans for the weekend?
The dog looks confused. "I thought we were going to talk about scary stuff, but I'm going to try to get my accounting in order. It's something I've been putting off for a while, and I have files that need to be refiled. Oh, hey, here's the mad scientist now." A cadaverous pale man walks in wearing a blood-covered white smock. He has strange goggle glasses on, and his hair is all akimbo. He's basically Doc Brown from Back to the Future, except with blood all over him. He's wiping something off on his hands, probably more blood, and stops for a second, surprised to see someone in his kitchen. "Excuse me," he says. "What are you doing in my kitchen?"
This is the heat's on us right now, Dan.
Flashlight. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you shine the flashlight in his eyes, but he's wearing those weird goggle glasses, so it doesn't do much.
What if we tell him... we're returning his dog.
And I place one hand on HW Dog's mouth.
HW Dog looks at you like, "Please don't touch me, sir. We don't have that kind of relationship." The mad scientist stares at you. "You have my missing dog? The dog that I lost years ago? The dog I feared I would never see again? You have Sprinkles?"
Oh, dear.
Now, Dan, I don't remember. When we checked inventory, was Sprinkles listed in inventory?
If some by magic it was turned into a cool running soundtrack, there's the possibility that...
Of course we have Sprinkles. Sprinkles is waiting just outside the front door. Let's show you.
That doesn't sound like Sprinkles, says the mad scientist. He was a real inside dog.
Sure, look at HW Dog now.
Sure, ask the mad scientist if he has any plans for the weekend.
I asked the mad scientist, "Do you have any plans for the weekend?"
"Well, I was creating an army of the undead to march on the town center and finally show all those who doubted me that I can have the power of a god, but..."
His voice got scarier as it went on.
"But now that you've told me that Sprinkles is back, I guess I'll spend the weekend becoming reacquainted with my lost dog who I loved so much, whose disappearance crushed me. Really this afternoon come to terms with it, but now knowing that you have him here, it just makes me feel elated. My soul jumps with joy, and the only thing that would crush me more is if it turned out this was all just some horrible ruse, did not have my dog Sprinkles."
The narrative stakes for my bad choice have just risen substantially.
Yeah. I open refrigerator.
The mad scientist shoves the refrigerator shut. "Excuse me. I can make you a margarine sandwich if you ask, but you don't have refrigerator privileges."
Request margarine sandwich.
"Why, I'd be happy to make a margarine sandwich for the man who found Sprinkles." He opens the refrigerator, which is full of mostly margarine, some sandwich bread, and of course there's like one of those old jars of pickles where there's just one pickle left in it. He should throw it out, but he just can't bear to, because the pickle is still probably good.
And
but
you should
never
save
really
that juice. You should save the juice for other
stuff. He'll use it for something. And also there's some old cheese and a human hand on a plate. Anyway, he takes out the margarine and the bread, and he lovingly spreads that margarine on the bread, puts it on a it's like a plastic like a hot pink plastic plate that says mm-hmm. do not microwave on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And he says, would you like me to heat it up in the microwave?
I'm going to say yes.
I also enjoy a heated margarine sandwich myself, says the mad scientist. H.W. Dog says, oh, brother. We've eaten so many margarine sandwiches. I'm going to go back to the wall where I live. H.W. Dog turns to leave the room. Are you going to say anything to him before he leaves?
Have fun doing your taxes. That's what he was doing for the weekend, right?
Yeah.
I didn't say I was doing taxes. I was saying doing general accounting, getting the books in order, and files. I really have to put my files in order. You know, you'd be surprised how much paperwork you can accumulate being a dog who lives in a wall behind a portrait in the dark. Well, I'm not getting anything done just standing here. I better sit behind that wall in case any more victims, uninvited guests come in. The mad scientist shoos him out and then hands you the hot margarine sandwich. Hands you the margarine sandwich. Wait, said the mad scientist. Did you want me to microwave this?
Yes, microwave sandwich.
Sorry, my mistake. I was just so busy thinking about sprinkles, sprank thinking, I call it, that I forgot to heat it up. He opens up the microwave, which is bigger than a normal microwave. Like, you could fit a whole human head in here, probably. Okay. Yes, you can, said the mad scientist, responding to the narrator. You can fit a whole human head into it, just to thaw them out. I don't eat them. He sticks the plastic plate with the margarine sandwich on it and is about to set the timer. How long do you want me to cook it for? Says the mad scientist.
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Ah, monsieur does enjoy his margarine hot, says the mad scientist. Affecting a sort of like flirty voice. I don't know what I don't know why.
I feel like a dark cloud's been lifted from his heart. Now that we've told him that Sprinkles is back in town.
The mad scientist puts the sandwich into the microwave. He puts 3 minutes on the timer and then hits cook. He leans against the counter, folds his arms, and looks at you.
Normally it says start, but I do like it says cook.
It's a special brand of microwave. Oh, wait, he turns and leans on the counter, folds his arms. So, what do you do? He asks. You look at the timer on the microwave. Still 2 minutes and 55 seconds left to go.
Shit, Stuart, what do we do? Oh,
We are home appraisers.
We're home appraisers. Here to appraise the place. There's a lot of dogs in the wall. Usually takes down the value of a home.
I would think that would the mad scientist says, I would think that would increase the value of the home to have a dog in the wall.
I say for some buyers, it's a feature rather than a bug to have a dog living in the wall behind a painting.
Mad scientist says, well, if I were to sell, I'd probably take HW Dog with me. since he is a dog.
No deal.
Probably. So there's a chance.
Well, if you were to make it worth my while, you glance at the timer on the microwave. 2 minutes, 45 seconds.
Time dilation. Now, did he hit the button for margarine sandwiches? You know how they have like popcorn and reheat?
He hit a button that said cook. I don't know.
I believe I was very clear that he hit a button that said cook.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever considered flipping your house, I ask?
The mad scientist chuckles to himself. I did flip the house once, literally upside down. A part of an anti-gravity experiment gone wrong. I lost so much crockery during that one. Here's a tip. Yeah. Make sure to tie down your crockery if you're doing anti-gravity experiments in the basement. You'd glance at the microwave. 2 minutes, 37 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we should just leave. I don't know.
What, leave the kitchen?
This conversation sure is going nowhere.
Actually, says the mad scientist, noticing that he's losing your interest, there is something that I've been meaning to talk to a home appraiser about. I recently stumbled into a mystery. Some would say a shocking, thrilling, surprising mystery.
Yep.
Something with twists and turns I didn't foresee, danger
right up our alley,
around every corner, and a surprising amount of PG-13 sexual content, bikinis and so forth.
Sure.
I'll tell you about it. It was a strange, strange thing that happened to me. On a cold, dark night. Uh-huh. Suddenly, there's a loud sound.
Not the Dark Knight DVD.
No, not a Dark Knight. I was watching. Oh wait, I was watching The Dark Knight on DVD. It was the Dark Knight. It was very cold that night. Perhaps the muted blues and grays that Christopher Nolan uses in his visual style in that film. He's trying to evoke what it is like in a real city. Suddenly, there's a buzzing sound from the microwave. Oh no, the plastic plate. I knew I wasn't supposed to put the plastic plate in there. The microwave explodes. There is hot, globby, melted plastic and margarine flying all over the place. The curtains, which I did not mention before because you did not ask me to tell you about much of the room, burst into flame.
And you're wearing your shirt that says, "Ask me about the curtains." your novelty t-shirt.
Yeah, so you should have asked me about the curtains. The fire quickly spreads along all of the, some would say vintage, I would say outdated wooden cabinetry.
Sure.
It's not anything against wooden cabinetry, but you understand. It's just like that style is a very 70s style. It doesn't age well. Oh no, my kitchen. But this kitchen is right above the oily rag room.
Oh no.
The fire has spread to the oily rag room. And before you know it, there are gorillas with electrodes on their heads running all over the place. Uh-huh. And mishuman animal monsters. Oh, I forgot to mention, I make a lot of animal-human chimeras. You didn't ask me. You were asking about the appraising of the house.
He's telling us this while there's a bunch of fiery gorillas running around.
Yes. So what do you do, basically? You're trapped in this kitchen. It's on fire. There's a bunch of fiery gorillas running around. And this guy is just fumfering, trying to explain what his situation is. What do you do?
I feel like I would... I'm going to... I will military crawl to the closest door.
You drop to the ground and turn to the closest door, but the closest door is blocked by an enraged gorilla who is trying to reach a fire extinguisher that is just a little too high up on the wall for him.
So can we so we're on the floor already. Why don't we just offer up our back for this gorilla to stand on to get to that extinguisher?
Okay, so you offer your back for the gorilla to stand on.
Exactly.
That's real neighborly of you, friend. I really appreciate it, says the gorilla, who can talk. He steps on your back. He steps on your back, probably breaking one or two ribs. Gorillas are very heavy, which you didn't realize.
Pretty big. Unfortunately,
he still cannot quite reach the fire extinguisher. Yeah. Well, it didn't work out. Sorry, pal, but thanks for the help. He gets off your back and jumps out the window, running away to safety. What do you do now?
Wow. So we're on the floor.
All you got was
ribs.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the mad scientist doing?
The mad scientist is making himself another margarine sandwich, but he's cackling insanely.
Oh, yeah,
he's saying,
mad,
"Why
yeah.
should what have I to worry about flames? Sprinkles is back. Sprinkles is back."
This is a tough call. And there's fire everywhere, and we're not immune to fire, right?
You can check. You want to check immunities?
Can I check my immunities?
You are immune to various dander allergies, but fire is not one of those immunities.
Yeah,
no,
it's not. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Is there any more margarine at all?
That's actually a good question.
You want to crawl over the refrigerator and see?
Yeah, let's go over and see what's in the fridge.
Okay, you army crawl over the refrigerator. At this point, you could just stand up, but it is very smoky there. You open up the refrigerator door, having to push a few gibbons and chimpanzees out of the way. Hey, watch it, pal! And you're like, get out of here. Inside, the refrigerator is full, as I mentioned, of sticks of margarine. There's a lot of margarine in there. Mm-hmm. And tubs. Tubs and sticks. Sticks and tubs. Stubs and ticks.
What?
Thanks, Ants. Thanks.
Okay, so do you want to grab a tub or a stick?
Let's grab, let's put one in each hand. You gotta, we'll wield the tub like a shield and the stick like a sword.
Okay, that's what we do.
I mean, it is fire that's the problem right here. But okay, sure.
What does heat do to to margarine. Nothing.
Okay, well, you're about to find out. You wield the tub like a shield and the stick like a sword.
Yes.
You crawl towards the door through the heat. The margarine melts all over you. You are now very...
Delicious.
You're delicious and slippery.
That's perfect. So I will try and build up some speed and then try and slide out the door.
Okay. You rev yourself up by sliding backwards on your tummy so that you and then until your feet are against the cabinets on the lower level. Push with your feet with all your might, and you slide across the floor like a non sequitur unexplained tangent in a Watchmen episode. And but unfortunately, you are angled towards the wrong door. Rather than going towards the hallway leading to the exit door, you lead towards the wrong door, and suddenly you are sliding down a spiral of stairs that leads you into the mad scientist's experimental dungeon. You see there's like electrodes and tables with things, you know, body parts strapped to them, and there's like lightning bolts everywhere, and it's not as hot down here, which is good. There's also a lot of issues of Golf magazine, I guess, and they're all turned to the ads for prescription drugs that I guess he saw the commercial and said CR ad in Golf magazine, and he decided to actually do that. There's a lot of highlights for kids, Ranger Rick, and zoo books, a lot of kids' magazines down there, just big piles of them.
Examine highlights for kids.
See, you open. Oh, yep.
No, I just specifically look for Goofus and Gallant, see what they're up to.
You decide that Goofus and Gallant might provide some guidance in this situation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Turn eight, no, not the Hidden Pictures page, not the New Dinosaur page, not the Timber Toes. Why would I want to read the Timber Toes, you say to yourself. You turn to Goofus and Gallant, and you see how Goofus picks up his grandmother and throws her in the sewer, while Gallant pulls a chair out to help his grandmother sit at the dinner table.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew that was going to happen.
So what do you do next?
I towel off.
You want to look for a towel? Or are you using the pages of the magazine?
I will look for a towel.
You don't see any towels. You do see smocks and lab coats. You could try to use and a terry cloth robe.
Change clothes into terry cloth robe.
Okay. Always, whenever the option, I don't care, in life, in games.
You change into the terry cloth robe. It has been freshly laundered. It's still a little warm. It feels great against your bare skin. You notice there's a monogram on the front of it that says MDS for Mad Scientist. And you put your hand in the pocket of the terry cloth robe, and you find a magic amulet.
Okay. Examine amulet.
It's a magic amulet.
Okay.
It's in the shape of like a scarab beetle, and its eyes are rubies, and on the back it has emeralds, and there's like a thing where you can turn little dials and wheels to move little letters and like symbols around. It looks very complicated. It looks like a lot of world building work has gone into it.
Mm. Okay.
Is this like a Kronos machine? What do we got here?
Are you going to ask the amulet that?
Yeah. Hey, amulet, are you a Kronos?
The amulet says, "Don't be racist. Not all amulets are Kronos machines."
Okay. Well, Seems to be a common response.
I happen to be one, though.
Okay.
I just don't want you to. I just don't want you to assume these things. What can I do for you?
What does that do? It turns people into vamps, right?
Yep. I don't know if that's is that the direction where we
is that where we see ourselves in 5 years
being vamps?
Yeah,
maybe
the amulet sounds impatient. So you want to be a vamp or not?
Wow, it's a pretty pushy amulet.
Yeah. The
amulet feels you judging it and says, "Guy's got to meet his quotas. We're all working men at the end of the day."
Yeah.
Okay. True. Use amulet.
Use amulet.
You use the amulet, which turns, which, and suddenly you feel, how do you use the amulet exactly? You just say use amulet?
I'd say use amulet.
Okay, the amulet does whatever it does in Kronos. It takes a moment to remember. It kind of like bites you or something. Anyway.
I think so.
you feel a change come over your body, where once you felt hot blood in your veins, now it feels kind of like icy cold water is running through them. You feel hungry in a way you've never felt before. Your teeth feel noticeably sharper and longer. Your hair looks more like a big white puffy butt on the top of your head.
Cool.
You're wearing a long... Suddenly, the terry cloth robe turns into like a long red silk robe. You have long fingernails now. Do you look in a mirror to see how you've changed?
Yeah, examine mirror.
There's no reflection. You're a vampire. The amulet is like, come on, dude. That's vampire 101.
It got us.
So what are you going to do now that you're a vamp?
Drink wine.
You look to your right and see a carafe of wine. I guess the mad scientist does his experiments while drinking, or maybe it's for celebrating afterwards. Either way, he probably shouldn't have an open container of alcohol in his mad scientist lab.
Table wine.
You take a sip, and it is as if some kind of ashy fungus had taken a poop in your mouth. You can't bear the taste of it, and you spit it out on the ground.
Say, I think we're vamps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet now the only music we like is the Howling of Wolves and no longer the Cool Running soundtrack.
Okay, play Cool Running soundtrack.
Yeah.
You look to the side and you see a cassette tape player. You pop in the Cool Running soundtrack and immediately are transported back to that magical summer when reggae was all the rage and Cool Runnings, starring the guys who are in it and John Candy, was playing in the theater.
I can't even remember Dougie Doug. I mean,
come on.
I couldn't remember if Dougie Doug was in or not. Because when I think of Dougie Doug, I think of Where I Live, his sitcom. So your mind drifts back. You were only an adolescent then. Cool Runnings had just come out in the theater, and you were going to go see it with the girl you secretly had a crush on. Her name? Lamima Gaudronge. Lamima Gaudronge was a girl that you went to school with, but your school had a reputation for being a little mysterious. Every now and then, students seemed to disappear, and their parents didn't seem to mind. In fact, the parents seemed to change in strange ways, becoming part of what you might call an alien collective. But that was something you tried to push out of your mind as you watched the underdog tale of a Jamaican bobsled team. And it's unlikely and yet incredibly entertaining trip to the Olympics in search of the gold. You really think about Cool Runnings and it makes a deep impression on you. You sit there and you watch it play a few times in the theater. The girl you came with, she's gone from your thoughts and soon gone from your life. She drifts out and you never see her again, probably a victim to the mysterious forces at work in the town. But you decide you have a deeper mystery to get used to. The mystery of the Jamaican bobsled team. Could it work, you think? Could it actually happen? That's what brought you to this mansion today. The rumor that there might be an athlete of Jamaican bobsled Olympic caliber living in this house. You'd been chasing them for years. You had assembled the most perfect Jamaican bobsled team in the history of Jamaican bobsledding. And now it was all coming together this final night. You realize as the cassette player clicks shut that you've listened to the entire soundtrack yet again. And once again, it has sent you into that trance that you can't help but drift into when Cool Runnings is the topic of conversation. You look up and see the night sky. The house is completely burned down around you. Luckily, you were in the basement. There's nothing there. Nothing but you, your new life as a vampire, and Cool Runnings. And you think to yourself, isn't this the way it was always meant to be? Isn't this what my life was heading towards all this time? To be the vampire coach of an Olympic Jamaican bobsled team? What do you do?
Actualize my dream?
Yeah. Finish Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Flash forward. It's 3 years, and you are standing with the team as they show off their golds to the television cameras. That's right. You did it. You brought this Olympic Jamaican bobsled team with you to the Olympics, and against all odds, this time you finally done. I did it, you say. I beat you, John Candy. I did what you could never do. I've always been better than you, and I always will be. By the way, I should mention these are Night Olympic Games. That's how you can go to them because you're a vampire.
Thank you. Yeah.
Also, you had a real running feud with John Candy, and you really want to show him up.
This is laying a lot of track at the back end of this story.
Yeah, bobsled track. What do you do? Okay, so you've achieved your dreams. What do you do?
Oh, God. Well, that is a good question. I've achieved my dreams, and now what do I do?
I mean, it's sponsorship deals at this point. You need to protect yourself for later in life.
You cry for a moment, because like Alexander, you have no more worlds left to conquer except for lucrative endorsement deals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You say, you look at your claws, your vampire claws, and you think, is that all these hands are good for?
Yeah.
I should feel such a sense of pride, such a sense of achievement, yet I feel only emptiness. Perhaps I was wrong to spend my life trying to outdo John Candy in this one particular way. Mm-hmm. Perhaps I should have looked for new kingdoms to explore, new lands to look into. Maybe I've done this all wrong. If only I could go back. If only I could go back. And that's when the amulet pops up and says, would you like a chance? Would you like a chance to right the wrongs of your life starting from the beginning? What do you do?
I mean, starting from the beginning, I think that's probably a good idea, right?
Sure.
So what do you tell the amulet?
Start from beginning.
Yeah, this time around we can be who's Harry Crumb.
There's a
swirling of lights around you, and you feel the vampirism drip away. The cold, icy water in your veins becomes hot blood again, and you find yourself on a dark night standing in front of a door of a mysterious house. What do you do?
Kiss the door.
Nothing happens. It turns out it was all a dream.
Oh, God. Oh.
Well, everybody,
we've been
that was
Zork rolls.
Thanks everybody for playing Radio Zork. Thanks to my contestants here, Dan and Stuart. Unfortunately, their character just drifted off into a sort of lucid dream about what might have happened. No one has still made it into the house. We still have no idea what's behind that door. Maybe next time on America's favorite frustrating radio text-based audio adventure game, Radio Zork. Thanks for playing, and thanks for your support for Maximum Fun and the Flophouse. I've been Elliot Kalin.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Stuart Wellington. I shouldn't have said my name over Dan.
Doesn't matter.
Nothing. Hey, nothing matters, Dan. Forget it. It's Radio Zork. Good night, everybody.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.